Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show.
Well, hi, everybody. And I say this every week, but it doesn't change. It is really how I feel. I'm so excited to have my guest today. My guest is Georgianne Irvine. She's affectionately known as George. I'll be calling her George. And she is the Director of Publishing for the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. And she is an award-winning author of children's books all about animals. Welcome back, George.
Thank you. It is so good to talk to you. I'm really excited to share information about some of our new books today and some of the things that the San Diego Zoo is doing.
It's so great because I was looking back at my records. I've been doing this for a while. You were actually a guest on my show in October of 2019. Yes, that was a while ago. But it just, you know, but life continues. And that's the beauty of social media, because we can also stay in touch that way as well, because we are friends there. But, and congratulations. I know you've just celebrated your 46 years with the San Diego Zoo Alliance. That's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. But for our listeners maybe that didn't listen and didn't hear our first podcast, why don't you just tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your background?
I was born and raised in San Diego, if you can believe that. And I actually grew up going to the San Diego Zoo. So the zoo has held a really special place in my heart for my entire life. And I studied journalism at San Diego State University, and that was my major. And I decided to go into public relations because it involved writing, working with film crews, producing videos. There was just a variety of things to do in public relations. And I'm also very passionate about storytelling. So I had no idea that my career would take me in the direction that it has, but it's really kind of funny because on my 21st birthday in college, a friend gave me a Curious George monkey plush.
You know,
famous stories about Curious George.
And yes.
I have a photo of me holding that monkey, and to this day that monkey is in my office. And it was really indicative of where my life was going to go, even though I didn't know that at the time.
Isn't that something? I mean, truly. So you had a great education. Have you spent, I think I mentioned, 46 years. So that's a pretty long part of your life. But you mentioned it just a little while ago. But way before you had a career there, you were that kid that went to the zoo. Now, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I don't even think the LA Zoo was even open when I was a child. And so if you went to the zoo, you went to the San Diego Zoo, and you kind of made it an outing. And I can remember going there as a child and meeting family members there and getting on a bus, because zoos are really interesting. And we're going to talk quite a bit about the San Diego Zoo and zoos in general. But so how did you actually get your job at the zoo?
I interned during my senior year in college at the San Diego Convention and Visitors Bureau. And literally 2 weeks after I graduated, a position came up at the San Diego Zoo as a public relations assistant. And it actually required a year of experience. But I thought, okay, I don't really have a year, but I may as well submit my resume. Well, I made it to the top two candidates, but I didn't get the job. And, you know, I never thought I'd make it that far. And I remember calling my mother when I didn't get the job, and I was in tears because at that point it's like, this is my ideal job. Literally 6 months later, the position opened up again. They called me back. I don't even think they interviewed anybody else, and I got the job. And I honestly feel that if I had gotten the job the first time around, it would have been too easy. And I think it really made me appreciate when I finally was hired as a public relations assistant at the San Diego Zoo. I really do think not getting it was probably good for me. And dreams do come true. And that's exactly what my mother said when I was saying, Mom, I didn't get it. She says, honey, just wait. You never know. Maybe the position will open up. Maybe a different position will open up. Your dream to work at the San Diego Zoo will come true. And it did.
Isn't that something? I mean, really, how many people can honestly say that road to success, that they, you know, they had this dream and it came true? And it's been true it must feel like your whole life practically. And how rewarding that must be for you to still love so much what you do and the impact that it has. It's pretty remarkable. I'm just curious.
It has been incredibly rewarding. Pardon me?
No, go right ahead. Go ahead about being rewarding.
No, I was just going to say, this job has been rewarding. My organization, which is now the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, is absolutely, one, a fantastic organization to work for. But our mission is protecting wildlife around the world. And we really have a vision of we want to create a world where all life thrives, which means wildlife, communities, you know, habitats. And it's funny, when I first got the job, it never occurred to me that I would stay at the zoo for such a long time. It's funny because in those days, you know, I was hired in 1978. People would go to a job and I figured, oh, you know, I'll be there 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, and then I'll move on in the public relations world. Well, 3 or 4 years went by and I was loving what I was doing. And then 10 years went by, and then 15 years went by. And it's so important to tell the stories of our wildlife care team and our veterinarians and our scientists and conservation staff that do work all around the world. And so if I can do anything to contribute to our mission and vision, it's really telling their stories. And we just had a meeting for all employees of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. And I really have to hand it to our CEO because he let everybody know that it doesn't matter what your job is. It really doesn't. Working for San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, anything you do is helping us with our mission. And he really got that message across, and it made everybody feel really good. I mean, my job, because it's storytelling, is more directly related, but other people are helping, you know, sell things in the gift shop that helps support the work we do. We're a nonprofit organization, so everything everybody does helps us with our mission and our vision.
You have an outstanding, we're going to talk about a couple of websites, but I'm looking at one right now, which is the one we're speaking about, which is the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. .org, and there's this owl that is staring at me, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I think I know you. It's just a fabulous. It physically, it's so cool to look at, and there's so much about what you do here, and these are the things because you know you mentioned that conservation isn't just something that we do here, and I know personally that you personally have done a lot of traveling, as have I. And I know that you may see life a little differently when you go to wherever you may go, whether it's Africa or it's Asia or it's wherever, you know, the Pacific Islands. Mm-hmm. You see things in a way that maybe is a little bit different than someone else. Do you think that's why you've stayed so long at the zoo, because you just love it so much?
I definitely stayed because I love it so much. and I have a passion for what we do. And it's really funny because in my early days with the organization, I would have headhunters come and offer me 3 more times the money than I was making in my current job. But it wasn't about the money. It was about
right.
what we were doing and the mission and the purpose. And everything I've done, it's fascinating as well. And I love wildlife and I love the people I work with. So it never, ever was about the money. I stayed because I believe in what we are doing, and that has become my passion in life, is doing anything I can to help protect wildlife and, you know, save our planet. And it's a tiny role that I'm doing, but it's something.
Well, it may be tiny in your mind right now, but I suspect it's really quite mighty. So we talked a little bit about the zoo, and you, like you mentioned, you grew up by the zoo. So when people think of zoos, they think of walking mm-hmm. around and they see animals that there's a hippo beyond that fence, or there's a bear, or there's a whatever, and you can see those animals out in the wild. But the safari park is something different. So I thought maybe you could just talk about the expectations of what people would find if they went to the zoo and what they would find if they were to go to the safari park, because they're two different things, correct?
Yes, we are two different locations. And what we like to say is that the San Diego Zoo and San Diego Zoo Safari Park are our two front doors to our organization and to our conservation work. And every person who visits us, who buys something, all of that supports the work we do. In addition, they can come to the zoo and the safari park to learn about wildlife and to learn about what we do and what they can do to help. So the San Diego Zoo, it was founded in 1916. So we have a long, long history. And the zoo has very natural habitats. Like if you go to see the hippos, for example, you can watch them swimming underwater. You can watch them grazing on the grass. We've got a beautiful polar bear habitat that's a summer tundra. So we don't have fake snow there. It looks like summer tundra. And so they are big, beautiful habitats where you can learn about the animals and you can see them exhibiting a lot of their natural behavior. At the safari park, though, it is a safari park. So think about this. Think about one habitat, East Africa, being 100 acres. So it's like a giant African savanna. And the entire San Diego Zoo is 100 acres. But at the park, we have animals that would live in East Africa. You've got wildebeest and giraffes and Cape buffalo, and they're roaming in this big, expansive habitat in herds, and you really get to see a lot of the natural behavior of those types of species of animals. And you take a tram around to see, and then we also have what's called a caravan safari. It's extra. It's over the price of admission, but you actually drive out among the animals. And a lot of people have a dream of going to Africa on safari, but honestly, I think most people never are able to fulfill that dream for whatever the reason. But if you come to the safari park, you have a feeling that you are in Africa. And we are building a new elephant area called Elephant Valley that opens in 2025 that will also just give you the feel of Africa for the elephants. It's just going to transform the safari park. So the park is different. It's out in the country. It's 30 miles north of the zoo. So it's really kind of fun to drive out there because after you get off the freeway, you're on a country road for quite a few miles. So it really gives you a feel that you're away from the city and that, you know, you've gone somewhere special. But the zoo is just north of downtown San Diego, and the zoo has a greater variety of animals there, and the zoo has many animals that probably would not work at the safari park. Like we have an Australian outback exhibit area, habitat at the safari park, and we've got platypus there, the only place outside of Australia where you can see platypus. But at the zoo, we have our koala habitat, and that's where all of our koalas live. And so you see different animals at both parks as well. There are a few that overlap. We do have giraffes at the zoo, but you'll see a lot of different animals at the park that you might not see at the zoo and vice versa.
I'm a bird person, but I have to say I have been to Africa, so I should probably be less expensive for me to come to Safari Park right now. Do you have enclosures for birds?
Yes, we have amazing walk-through aviaries at the zoo and the safari park. And we just opened a new aviary at the safari park with dozens of birds. We have a lot of different aviaries. I love our hummingbird aviary. You don't hummingbirds, but you have a variety of other birds. It's just magical. But we have even larger walk-through aviaries as well. So you really get a feel that you are in the bird's habitat. And it's one of the things where you need to sit and you need to look and you need to listen. Because a lot of times if you just walk through it quickly, you might say, oh, I didn't see a lot of birds. It's like, well, yes, the birds are there. But just like when you're in the wild, you need to sit and be patient. You need to spend time in our aviaries so that you can really observe their natural behaviors and watch the birds in action. And they nest in those aviaries. It's truly, truly magical. So if you love birds, we have different aviaries at both the zoo and the safari park that you'll probably go in there and you're not going to want to leave because they're so magical. And you see so many birds and so many natural behaviors.
I'm looking at your website. And there's this picture, animals and plants, and I have no idea what kind of a bird that is. It has kind of a hawk's face, but the color and the wings don't make me think that it's a hawk. But I don't know what it is. It's not a turkey. I have no idea
what
it is.
Is it on the zoo or the safari park homepage?
It's on the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance.org. And it's under news and resources, and then it says animals and plants.
Okay. Well, I will have to look for that, and I will see if I can come up with a name for you. I'm not there right now.
There's a tiger, there's an iguana, and there's some kind of bird that has, like, white feathers, but then coming away from its neck are these black feathers that look like it could belong to a mockingbird or something. But anyway, I was just curious what it was because I'm a bird brain. But let's get back to you. So why do you think zoos, including the San Diego Zoo and the Safari Park, are so important in the world?
Zoos inspire people. There's nothing like seeing an animal. There's nothing like listening to it and smelling it and just getting a feel for that particular species. And zoos are also very much involved in conservation, accredited zoos, I should say, the American Zoo and Aquarium Association. You know, they accredit us, and they're very strict with, you know, how our homes for animals are built and that sort of thing. So any zoo that is accredited by the AZA is also involved in conservation efforts around the world. So by supporting a zoo, first of all, you are getting inspired to care about wildlife. And then you are also supporting conservation efforts that are, some are taking place at home, like we do work in our own backyard in Southern California, and some is taking place overseas. So zoos are really important. When I see the faces of young children who come to the zoo and look at them watching the elephants or the giraffes and see the delight on their face, including kids who have never been to a zoo before, I know this is what it's all about. You need to get the children inspired. You need to get the children to care so that they can help us save wildlife and habitats around the world. So there are multifacets. There's the inspiration. There's the education. Much of what we do in zoos, we apply to some of the work that we do with animals in the wild. And I'll give you an example. We support an elephant orphanage in Kenya, Rakati. Oh. And so when you have orphan elephants, you need to give them a milk formula. So we studied the milk formulas of our female elephants who gave birth to babies, and we learned what they were made up of, and that helped us work with the Rakati folks to create a great milk formula for the baby elephants. And we did something similar with giant pandas. And we look at behaviors in zoos, and we can apply that to some of the animals in the wild when we're doing conservation work with them. So there's really a lot that can happen in zoos that can be applied to wildlife in the wild as well, in addition to inspiring and educating people.
Well, I think that's great. And I'm looking at another website, and I will also include this in my blog, where it's the San Diego Zoo Wild Alliance.org /press room. And on that page are all these phenomenal elephants. And, you know, it's one thing to go to a zoo and see them, because where else are you going to see them? They're not going to be in your backyard
mm-hmm.
unless that's where you live. And if you aren't able to do the traveling that maybe you'd like to do and go someplace, this is absolutely, without a doubt, the next best thing, because you are really seeing them living their habitat. And, I mean, when you see a giraffe or a rhino or a lion, any of these things, it leaves an impression. Obviously, it left an impression on you. You spent your life there, which I think is just, it's amazing. And I'm curious to know why the zoo started a publishing division, because that's what you're involved in, correct?
Yes, yes. It is interesting, because there was a time when, with the internet and with e-books and all, there was a time that a lot of people thought the book publishing industry was gone, was dead, that nobody wanted printed books. But in late 2016, our CEO felt, you know, we've got our website, we've got our magazine, The Journal, we've got people coming on ground, and he just felt that books were another way to reach people. And at that point, book sales were increasing again. And
mm-hmm.
one of the things, what's interesting to me, especially with the children's books, and even with myself, parents really didn't want their children to be on their devices all day long. So parents
right.
and children were saying, my gosh, we need to get them interested in books, in hardcover books and softcover books, something that they can hold, because we don't want them to spend all of their time on their phone or on their iPad or on their computer. And so book sales started rising again. And we just thought it was a different, more permanent way to reach our audiences. And we had a lot of stories to tell. So literally, this is kind of funny, our management pulled me out of, at that point I was in our philanthropy department, and put me in the retail department, and our retail director at the time was just a business genius. So he said to the two of us, start a book publishing division. And that was it. So Yvonne Miles is her name. She started working on the business aspect, and we partnered with Southwestern Publishing, who does our guidebooks, which is now Capen Publishing. And then I was more on the creative side, figuring out what types of books we were going to do. And so we started our publishing division. And we created a few books for the adult audience that were of historical nature, about mm-hmm. some of the leaders of our past. But my specialty has always been nonfiction children's books. So I felt that we really needed to do a collection of books that were telling stories of individual animals, illustrated with photos, which can be a challenge. And I thought that if a child could get to know Karen the orangutan, get to know her personally, get to know her story, that it would inspire them not just to care about Karen, but to care about orangutans in general and wildlife in general, and get them interested in conservation. So I created the Hope and Inspiration collection, and then we also have illustrated books for younger children. And those are fictional stories, but they've got great messaging too, like how to be, you know, how important it is to be kind, or just because you don't, you're not a loud mouth, it doesn't mean you don't have a lot to say. Or we even address wildlife trafficking at a very basic level for young children. So our books are really important, especially the children's books. That's what we're mainly focusing on now, because we feel that the children are our future. And by sharing our stories with those children, we are inspiring them to care. We are inspiring them to learn more about animals. And we just hope they are our future allies for wildlife. They are our future conservationists. So and what's really fun for me is whenever I go to a baby shower nowadays, the mom-to-be always asks people to bring their favorite book. I just love it. So the younger women who are having babies want books in their life, and that just overjoys me. You know, I love that. That means the world to me.
Well, you know, I'm looking at your books because you generously sent me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8. The pictures alone are spectacular. The size of the font is nice and large. And I think that it's just, it's great to see how you've put this together, because maybe nobody's ever heard about, you know, an animal that you're talking about, because they don't know what a baby tapir is. Maybe they've heard of orangutan, but they really don't know, is it a monkey? You know, what's the difference between that and that? And by doing this and by actually sharing these stories, and I see these as the kind of book where you just sit down with your child and you read it together. And I think these need to belong in all the classrooms in our country, because these are books that teachers can share during reading time and really hold an interest for their students. And you never know, just like for you, what would inspire them to maybe want to go into this field. Maybe they want to go everything from being a publisher to being an author to being a photographer. You know, you just, I mean, these are really spectacular, beautiful books. So you are an award-winning, I might add. So I mean, I think that this is really great, and I'd be curious to know this. You know, so how did your very first book come about? What was the, how did that happen? What book was that very first book?
You mean of all the books I've ever written?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. My grandmother wrote children's books, and they were self-published, so she never found a traditional publisher. So I got it in my head as a child that someday I wanted to write children's books. When I got my job at the zoo, one of my duties was as I was editor of Koala Club News, which was our children's newsletter. So I literally wrote stories for kids, and it was a monthly newsletter, and that was probably how I learned to write for children. And I confided in my boss. Oh, my gosh. She was such a mentor to me. Her name was Carol Town Seton, and we have since lost her, which was devastating. She passed away of cancer a few years ago, but she really believed in me. And I confided in her that I wanted to someday write a children's book. So in the early 1980s, a publisher approached the zoo and approached Carol and said, we would like to create a series of 6 children's books for a first grade level. We would like to use San Diego Zoo photographs. And then they asked Carol, do you have any person you think might be able to write these books for us? And keep in mind, they were very short manuscripts. So Carol suggested me, and it was called Ideals Publishing. And so the next thing you know, I have a contract to write 6 children's books, and I've never even written one. So So I remember the very first one I wrote was Sydney the Koala, and I remember calling up my editor, who was in Wisconsin, you know, no internet in those days, reading the manuscript, which was literally about a page and a half, reading the manuscript to her over the phone, and she said, that's exactly what we're looking for. That's it. Got it. And so when she said that, that gave me the confidence to finish the other five manuscripts. And they were fictional stories with animal, you know, information in them, and they were illustrated with photos. And then they wanted another six books. And then Scholastic had me write a book about the true story of Corky the Blind Seal. And I also did a collection of five books for Simon & Schuster. So throughout my zoo career, I freelanced a lot of books for children. And so I think that's what really set me up for creating the book publishing division that we have today.
I think that's so cool. I don't have grandchildren, so I haven't been on a school property to know if they still have libraries there. But it seems
they
like
do.
These books
they
should
do.
Well, I think that these books should definitely be in the library, and I just think they're fabulous. But I got to tell you, before you tell us about your recent books in your collection of hope and inspiration, which the tagline is perfect, congratulations are in order for you. What awards did you just win?
Thank you. I am so honored. So my book, Teaching Tornero, The True Story of a Sloth Superstar, won the Gold Benjamin Franklin Award presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association. So it's a national award as best nonfiction children's book. And then my amazing Omeo book, A Baby Koala's True Story of Survival, won the Silver Ben Franklin. And really, to me, I love winning awards. Everybody does. But to me, it's indicative that there is a market for this type of book. And also, the books don't just – I'm the orchestra conductor. These books are the story of our wildlife and our wildlife care and our wildlife veterinary teams at the San Diego Zoo and Safari Park. So I am just helping to tell their stories. So a win – just because I'm the author is also a win for them. And it means the world to me. And I'm really honored because of the 8 Hope and Inspiration books that we have now in the collection, 7 of them have won Ben Franklin Awards. So that tells me we're doing something right. And one of the things about these books, Waste Anything, the end papers, for example, have the paw prints or the footprints of the animals with information. We have an animal fact section in the back. We have a section on conservation efforts to help the animals. And we also have a list of 10 things kids and their family can do to help wildlife. So in addition to the story about the individual animal, we have all of these other aspects of the book. So when you open the book, you do not see blank end papers. You see footprints and information, and the books are just fun and they're colorful as well.
I love it. I'm actually looking at one of them right now. I'm looking at the Omeo book about the baby koala. And, you know, let's face it, I mean, that isn't something that you see in your daily life. Maybe you do because of your work, but I'm just saying, what I'm hoping is that as people listen to this, and they are living in another part of the country. There's zoos everywhere, so it's not like this is the only zoo. But I would like to think that people can be inspired to get involved in their own local zoos. We've got time, and I thought maybe we could just spend a little bit of time actually talking about some of these books. So let's start about the amazing Omeo, A Baby Koala's True Story of Survival. What's that about?
So before I tell you what that's about, one thing I would like to say about these books, and I can tell you some details about it later, is when I wrote them, I really wanted to tell the story of the particular animal. But what I found is many of these animals have stories that teach life lessons to children. And that really surprised me. So I can tell you a little bit about that later. But Amazing Omeo. So most people know that a koala is a marsupial. So that means the baby is born. And in the case of the koala, it's born after 32 days gestation. It's the size of a jelly bean. Think of this, the size of a jelly bean, and it crawls into the mother's pouch. So a baby koala needs to be raised in its mother's pouch for 6 months, and then you start seeing a foot pop out or an ear, and it gradually starts coming out of the pouch. But for those first 6 months, that baby needs to be in the mom's pouch, attached to a teat, drinking milk. Omeo's mother died of cancer when he was only 5 months old.
Oh, no.
In addition to that, because she had cancer, he wasn't getting quite the nutrition that he needed. So when she passed, we had to rescue him from the pouch, and we had to have our wildlife care specialist raise him and give him milk formulas. Well, we have never raised a koala that young before. And we reached out to our colleagues in Australia, and they actually told us, don't get too attached to him. He's not going to make it. He's just too young. Well, we're not going to give up on any animal. And Omeo had this will to survive. I mean, so really a few weeks after his mother passed and he was out of the pouch, and we put him in an incubator. And, you know, so we did everything you're supposed to do to try to simulate the inside of a mother's pouch. But when we were feeding him, we noticed he wasn't breathing properly. It turns out he got pneumonia. That's really serious for a baby koala that age. So we didn't know if he would make it, but our incredible veterinarian, Dr. Cora Singleton, treated him with medicine. We used a nebulizer, which kind of blows a mist into the baby koala, and he made it. He absolutely made it. He survived. There were many other times when we didn't know if he would make it through the night, and then the next morning he would be fine. So really, his life was up and down, and his name actually means mountains, hills. So he had many mountains to climb in his quest for survival. So when he was a year old, you know, I am following him. Our photographer is shooting photos of him. I am shooting photos of him. And when he was a year old, our veterinarian said, George, he's still not out of the woods yet. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to change my vocabulary. I don't want to jinx anything. I'm not going to say when I write a book on Omeo. I'm going to say if I write a book about Omeo. So he continued to grow, but he had some challenges. Koalas only eat eucalyptus, and normally a mother koala teaches her baby which eucalyptus species to eat. So we tried to teach him as well, but he would only chew on the stems, and he chewed on the bark, but he wouldn't chew on the leaves, which is what he's supposed to do. And when he did chew on them, he'd spit them out. So we'd have to make up a mixture, kind of a smoothie of eucalyptus. We put him with other koalas. We did everything. We even put him with his half-brother, Iluka, hoping that Iluka would teach him to eat eucalyptus. And all Iluka wanted to do was play. So he actually distracted Omeo from eating. Without giving away some of the details in the story, when Omeo turned 2 years old, he had started eating eucalyptus, and it's really interesting what happened there, and people need to get the book and they can read about it. It's kind of fun. And that's when Dr. Cora finally said, he's out of the woods. You can finally write the book about him. So I followed him for 2 years, not knowing whether we would be able to write this book, but he just had this strong will to survive. I'm happy to say that Omeo will turn 5 years old on July 15th, and he's doing really, really, really well.
Oh, nice. Isn't that great? Well, I wanted to talk about a few other books. Maybe we'll just talk about a couple of them, because I have another couple of questions I want to ask about how people can support you. So between between these books, Raising Dawn, True Spunky Story of the Baby Taper, or Saving Milka, The True Tale of the Rescued Tiger Cub. You want to pick one of those and tell us about one of those two books?
I'm going to tell you about Raising Dawn, and the reason is it will illustrate one of the life lessons that I talked about. So Dawn is a taper, and he's a Baird's taper, and it's a critically endangered species from Central and South America. There are also a different species in Asia. And if people wonder what is a taper, if you go back in time, they're like a cross between – their closest relatives are horses and rhinoceroses. But they don't really
I'm looking at
these
pictures.
But those, and a baby taper looks like a watermelon on legs. He's brown and white with stripes and spots. Anyway, Dawn's mother, Luna, was pregnant. He was her first calf, and when he was born, she really didn't quite know how to take care of him. So we had to separate them, but we tried to reintroduce Dawn to his mother, and she just wasn't interested in him. So our wildlife care team had to feed him. And something that I think the listeners will find amusing, we wanted to get some of his mother's milk, and our team went to Target and bought a breast pump, thinking that maybe they could get, you know, her milk by using a breast pump. And we found out, no, breast pumps do not work on tapers. They don't. So they discovered, though, that if they scratched her with a scrub brush, she would lay down and she would let us safely milk her like a cow, and we were able to get Luna's milk for Dawn. So we tried to introduce him to Rachel, an elderly taper, but because he was so spunky, because he was, you know, a baby, he really annoyed her and she didn't want to spend time with him. So we continued to hand feed him. We also needed to teach him how to swim because mother tapers teach their babies how to swim. They live in wetlands, so swimming is really, really important. So our team taught the baby how to swim. As he grew, we started to introduce him to the other animals that shared his habitat. So he made friends with Bristle, a capybara. A capybara is the world's largest rodent. They can get to be up to 40 pounds. And Dawn and Bristle, they bonded. They became absolute best friends. But when Dawn approached the guanacos and the llama to become friends with them, they bullied him. They didn't like him. They put their ears down and they did their shrieks, alarm calls. They kicked at him and they spit at him. And when I interviewed our wildlife care team in writing this book, they actually used the word bully, and my ears perked up thinking, they really bullied him and he didn't care? So it's not the theme of the whole book, but there are a couple page spreads that deal with bullying, and the messaging is even though Dawn was bullied, he didn't care. He already had a best friend. And that's a message that children, you know, a life lesson that children can take away from this book. And in the end, you know, Dawn grows up and he becomes friends with Rachel because he's not as spunky. And he is now at the Nashville Zoo. He's all grown up. He has a girlfriend named Juju, and we hope that he will become a father of his endangered species, a Baird's taper, because they're endangered. But what was really amazing is shortly after Dawn left to go to Nashville, Luna had another baby, and this time she took care of that baby. And she's had a few babies since, and she's an excellent, excellent mother. So he was her first. You know, quite know what to do, but she learned. And so, but there is that life lesson in this particular story about Dawn. And he was very funky. He was really precious.
Is my memory serving me right? Is there a really famous zoo in St. Louis?
The St. Louis
maybe,
Zoo?
Maybe not.
But he went to the Nashville Zoo in Tennessee.
In Tennessee. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, he went to the Nashville. Yes.
Got it.
But the St. Louis Zoo is very famous as well. But yeah, he's at the Nashville Zoo. And every once in a while I get updates on him. He's not a dad yet, but he's in a beautiful habitat and he's doing really, really well.
You know, you're talking about stories, and I can't help but think that these books must have a huge impact on children and adults. When children are reading these, when adults are reading these stories to their children or their classroom students, this must have a huge impact on everyone. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I do agree. And let me just tell you a story, something that really surprised me, this packet of letters that I got last year. One of the books is about Fabulous Floyd the Flamingo, and it's about a flamingo who never gave. And I got a letter and it from Bourne Primary School in England, of all places.
Ooh.
It totally surprised me. And here's, I'm going to paraphrase, but it made me cry when I got this letter. Dear Ms. Irvine, please find enclosed some letters from the children of Bourne Primary School in England. As a school, we purchased a number of copies of your book, Fabulous Floyd, to launch a new initiative with the children called Give It a Go Flamingo. We wanted to help children understand the importance of resilience and of not giving up, just like Floyd. And they introduced the book through an assembly. They had a week-long course about this book and about teaching kids never to give up. And then the final day of the week, all of the kids dressed up like flamingos. What was most amazing, when I say a packet of letters, I received a packet of 55 handwritten letters from the children of the school in England telling me how much Floyd meant to them and how he taught them to be resilient and to never give up. And that is something, when I said that these books teach life lessons, I never expected. Karen the Orangutan, which was the first book of this collection, had a hole in her heart. And so she's now 32, but this story is how when she was, 2 years old, she had open heart surgery to repair the hole in her heart. And the surgery went really well, but then she got water in her lungs and was on a ventilator for a couple weeks, and we didn't even know if she would survive, but she did, of course. And she got get-well letters from all over the world. But even now, I get emails from parents saying things like, my child had open heart surgery just like Karen. When they read Karen's book, they finally were able to understand what had happened to them. And then I've gotten the letters from parents saying, my child is about to have open heart surgery. When they read Karen's story, it gave them the courage to move forward. And, they said, if Karen can do it, I can do it. And it gave them the confidence. So these are the types of stories, I wanted to inspire kids to care about wildlife, but it never occurred to me when we created these books that they would also teach the kids life lessons. And that is exactly what these books have done. So I couldn't be more honored and proud when I hear things like that, how those books have made a difference in the lives of kids.
Right. And, and then those kids become adults, and then they have children. So it's an ongoing process.
Yes.
How can people help with wildlife conservation? What's the best way to do that?
There are many things they can do. I would love for them, if they're in San Diego, to visit the San Diego Zoo and Safari Park, because, their visit supports the work we do. Purchasing these books support the work we do. We're nonprofits, so please, please visit us. Join San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. Donate to us. That really helps us with the work that we do around the world. But I also feel that people should support the accredited zoos that are in their community. Visit the zoo in your community. If you live in New York City, yes, visit us in San Diego, but please visit the Bronx Zoo as well. It'll inspire you, and you will help support the Bronx Zoo with whatever work they are doing. And then in the back of our books, I mentioned that we have some simple things people can do to help wildlife. It's really important for people to learn about the local wildlife that lives in or near their community. I mean, yes, I love elephants. I love rhinoceroses. But where I live in San Diego, we have canyons that are home to coyotes and opossums and bobcats and rabbits. And, you know, I've tried my best to learn about those animals, too. And, you know, I've learned to cohabitate with them. I don't let my dogs – I have a very nice fenced yard, but the dogs don't go out after dark without me escorting them. People can, in their own yards, create a wildlife habitat by planting native bushes and flowers. One thing that really helps wildlife that people never think of is to keep your cats indoors, because your cat will be safer. Yep. Your cat won't get hit by a car. It won't get hurt. But when you do that, you are also helping the local wildlife, because the cats eat the lizards, they eat the birds. So those are simple things. Recycling, you know, put trash that can't be recycled in the garbage so it doesn't end up in the ocean. Use a reusable water bottle. So there are a lot of simple things that people can do that truly will make a difference. And Jane Goodall is my idol. She
I was
is,
just going to say,
a friend.
And you know her, don't you?
Yes, she is a dear friend of mine. She just celebrated her 90th birthday. But Jane says that if we will just give Mother Earth a chance, she will heal. And she says anything you do, no matter how small it is, will make a difference. All of those little things add up. So, you know, support conservation organizations, support San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, visit your local zoo. Do these smaller things as well. That can make a difference in your own neighborhood. And if everybody did all of the things I'm mentioning, wow, we would be further along in our efforts to protect wildlife. And one of the other things I did want to draw up, just
please
mention, the conservation work that San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance does around the world in our conservation hub, we partner with organizations in those countries, and it's really important to us that we work with the local communities to help those communities thrive as well, which is what I mean by we want all life to thrive. So we work with hundreds of conservation partners in all of the different countries where we do our work, and that is something really, really important for people to remember, is that you have to have partners. We can't do this alone.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And if anybody's been listening to the news recently, there was a big deal that recently happened where the pandas from China are perhaps coming to the U.S. Can you tell us about that and where they might be going?
Yes. Yes, they will actually be coming to the San Diego Zoo.
Oh,
so
God.
We have a...
Okay.
It's so exciting. I can't tell you when. We think it might be this summer, but we don't really have exact dates yet. But just to give you a little history,
please.
We had giant pandas here in 1987-88 for a short-term loan. Then in the 90s, we had giant pandas here of 23 years. For the past 30 years, we have partnered with conservation organizations in China, you know, working to protect giant pandas, their habitats, learning about them. So the whole loan is not just about inspiring people, but it's helping support our giant panda conservation efforts, the things that we are doing, everything from panda reproductive behavior, physiology, nutritional requirements, habitat needs, genetic research. We are working with Chinese colleagues in all of these areas. So we will be getting two giant pandas. One of them is Yun Xuan. What's really exciting, it's a five-year-old male. He is the grandson of Bai Yun, who was our giant panda who lived at the San Diego Zoo for 23 years Bayou is the mother of Hua Mei, the first giant panda ever born in the United States to survive. So Jen Jen, her daughter, is the mother of Yun Chuen. So it's really exciting that we're getting one of Bai Yun's relatives to the zoo. And he's described as mild-mannered, gentle, and lovable. And then the female coming is Xing Bao, and it's a four-year-old female. And she was born at the Wulong Panda Base, and she is described as gentle and a witty introvert with a sweet round face and big ears. And her name means new treasure of prosperity and abundance. So these two pandas, we hope, will arrive sometime this summer, and we hope that they will eventually become parents to babies. And what's special is that our conservation team is continuing to work with our conservation partners in China to protect giant pandas and their habitat and to learn as much as we can about them. And when people visit the zoo to see our giant pandas, that will help support the important conservation work that we are, you know, that we are collaborating with our Chinese colleagues. One of the things we that I just am really amazed at, giant pandas often have twins. And in the past, a panda mom could only raise one of the twins. Well, we worked with our Chinese colleagues they came up with what's called the twin swapping process, where they take a baby panda from the mom, they feed it a milk formula, and then they return it to the mom and then take the other one and feed. So they kind of go back and forth. We created a milk formula that literally increased the survival rate for nursery-raised cubs from 5% to 95%. Think about
that. Oh, my goodness.
Our team created that formula. Our Chinese colleagues came up with the twin swapping process and increased the survival rate of baby pandas. I mean, that's what collaboration is all about. But those are the types of things that if we work together, we can do to help increase wildlife populations. And I mentioned what we were able to do for the baby elephants at Rattati.
How long does a panda bear live, typically?
They can live to be in their 30s. They can live to be in their 30s. So, So that's pretty old. I went to China to a 35th birthday party for a giant panda back in one of the pandas who had been here in 1987-88 turned 30 years old, and the people at the panda facility invited me to come to her birthday party, and I did. And she made it to 37 or 38, and that's really old for a giant panda. So they live a good long life.
I mean, I recognize they're not pets. They're not, come on,
no,
baby, we're going to lay down together. They're not pets.
No,
Do they allow you to touch them or to stroke them or to do any of that, or is that just not going to happen?
No. Years ago, panda reserves in China innate let people hold baby pandas on their laps, and that would help raise money for conservation. But now, no, you don't get to pet them. You don't get to hold them. Pandas are wild animals. You know, zoo animals are really wild animals, and exotic animals do not make good pets. They do not. Just because an animal looks cute when it's a baby doesn't mean it's going to be cute and friendly when it's adult. And the Mocha book that is about a baby tiger who was being smuggled into the U.S. to become someone's pet, and he was confiscated, and we were able to raise him, and he's now at a forever facility living his best life. But he would have died had he not been confiscated because he had a lot of medical issues. And trust me, tigers do not make good pets. No wild animal makes a good pet. They should be left to the professionals to take care of them in natural habitats.
Oh, man. It's just, I can't imagine that people are not listening and saying to themselves, I got to get over to the zoo, wherever that zoo might be, and really appreciate what that must be like, because now I know for myself, I have a different kind of perspective about this. Like I said, you were very gracious to send me many of these books, And I do think that this is something that my friends, or even maybe you're not a school teacher, but you have grandkids. You know, this is a perfect book for you to be books that you can be sharing with them. So I just want to tell you, thank you. Thank you for your generosity, number one. Number two, for all that you're doing, you live a life of tremendous purpose. Would you agree?
Yes, I would absolutely agree. I love what I'm doing. I could retire any time, but I am not ready to. There's still too many stories to tell.
I think it's great, and I imagine you're probably always got something going on inside that brain of yours. That's thinking, I think the next book is going to be about, and I imagine that that's there. And I mean, I just know from somebody that enjoys photography, loves birds. You know, I appreciate nature. I really truly do. I've been on safari. I've actually seen, you know, the zebras and the elephants and the lions and the and all the tigers and bears. Oh my, they're all out there. And I would so recommend that if you can't afford to get yourself to South Africa, perhaps you consider going to your local zoos and seeing what they have to offer, because you may be pleasantly surprised. So just as before, this is so clearly a passion, and I'm so delighted that you were able to spend this time with me, sharing that with me, but also with our listeners. I just thank you so much for joining me today. It was just fabulous.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me share some of the amazing stories about our wildlife. And I hope that I have inspired people to care. Animals need our help. They're disappearing all over the world. So I hope that your listeners will realize that we need to do everything we can to protect the wildlife and habitats on our planet.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And everybody, you now have been given a challenge and an encouragement to do this because you've listened to this podcast. So I'm going to let George get on with her afternoon. And my cat has been laying here next to me this entire time. And I'm looking at her thinking, well, you're not wild, but you sometimes make me a little cuckoo. But, you know, I mean, what do we do without the animals in the world? They're so important. I realize a pet cat isn't the same as the giraffe out in the wild, but they're still animals, and they deserve our love and attention. So thank you once again for joining me, and I look forward to hearing from you again. You never know what's going to come next with us, George, right?
That's right. I have lots more stories to share. Lots more books ahead of us.
Perfect.
Thank you.
All right, you're so welcome. I'm going to let George go now. Bye, everybody, and thanks so much for listening.